You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Tour de France FAM, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Stage 4, today we're in Bar-sur-Aube.
How amazing is that?
Yeah, how amazing is that, actually?
Yeah, you tell me how amazing this is, actually.
Well, it's pretty unusual to start the podcast with a question from the stage winner herself, Marlen Reuser, there, asking how amazing was her performance. Rook, how amazing was her performance today?
It was pretty impressive, I'd say. There was no time trial in this Tour de France Femmes, and so she just created one for herself.
But it's the perfect way to do it. Lizzie, you know, how amazing was it?
It was, you know, Marlen is a really good friend of mine, and she won't mind me saying that it was a very good performance, but she capitalised on the fact that the GC favourites were in a position where they were kind of looking at each other and they didn't want to risk anything because it had been such a risky stage already. And she had five riders there, so they played the numbers game, and, you know, she says it herself, she was the lucky one. So it had to have been a rider who was a good time trialist, but it could have been her, it could have been Chantal Black, and it could have been Lotte Kopecky. To be honest, any of those riders probably would have made that work.
Well, there you go, Marlen. That's what one of your friends thinks of you anyway.
Well, I think she's very, very good. And I did say in the preview that if she was let off the leash, she would probably go and do something like this. But, you know, it was just, that's the way SD Works ride, right? They have numbers up there and they play the game. And Marlen was the lucky one to win the game today.
I also think, though, what worked in her favor is that she started the stage so far down that she wasn't, you know, a really big threat to the GC. So they, you know, were pretty flexible in letting her get a little headway.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's true. Well, should we actually... first of all, I should say, where are we, Rook? We're out. Lizzie has actually joined us in having a glass of champagne today. I'm very pleased. Or rosé, sorry.
Thimble full of rosé. Probably. Well, that's because I've drunk most of it already.
It's now become... What was a bucket is now a thimble. But Rook, you know, where are we? And, you know, what's the ambience here?
We are now in... We continue to be in champagne country, but rosé is also very popular around here. And by the looks of it, people have been enjoying plenty all day.
That's true.
They did have champagne in the press room again, but unfortunately I didn't get to partake.
I didn't get any either, but we're in a very nice square in Bar-sur-Aube, which I'm struggling to remember because there's a lot of bar... I mean, tomorrow morning's start is in Bar-le-Duc, and there's... today I was in... had lunch in Bar-sur-Seine. But I think
you've been in all the bars, haven't you, Rose?
I've been in all the bars. Don't worry, I'm doing my cycling podcast duty here. I'm making sure I'm ticking up all the bars. But we're in a lovely little square. There's a yellow jersey bunting that's up, which is a new word for you, Rook. The
it
word
is.
Bunting, which I didn't realise was just a British word, but there you go. There's some bunting. There's actually a outside little beer garden that's just been dismantled, which had a load of cycling jerseys hanging up, which I should remember. That was a very good way of me reminding everyone that Cycling Podcast has a partnership with MAP, and we challenged MAP to create three jerseys for us this year. That one of them is gonna be made and sold, and I believe that the votes have been counted, and the winner was Dot. So
the winner was Dot, indeed.
Yes. So that was a 80s inspired jersey. So I recommend people go and check that out. And if you were a Czech or Fade supporter, I'm sorry, but, you know, Dot is what we're going to be having. But, yeah, we're looking forward to that. That was just, sorry, I did that so seamlessly. I couldn't believe it. But we haven't even heard what, we've heard all my commercial adverts, but we haven't actually heard what happened in the stage yet. So, Lizzie, why don't you roll us off with your tale of the etap?
Why don't we, Rose? Well, stage 4, 126.8 kilometres from Troyes to Bar-sur-Aube. And it was the C words flying around once again, as chaos and carnage were the expectation for this hotly anticipated gravel stage.
I'm glad you said that, Lizzie, because I thought that was going to go down.
I was like, what C word?
A heavily backloaded stage saw 5 categorised climbs, a bonus climb, and 13 kilometres of the Champagne region's finest chunky, chalky gravel, all to be tackled within the final 60 kilometres. The late early break finally took off 40 kilometres into the stage. Valerie Demay of Live Racing Extra, Lara Asensio of Cerates at WNT Pro Cycling, and Coralie Demay of Saint-Michel Aubert 93. The latter of the trio by far the strongest, attacking and dropping her companions, with her gap then yo-yoing ahead of the front group until finally being resorbed at 36 kilometres to go. Thick white dust kicked up high off the dry, chalky roads, and the peloton, stacked to the brim with all the big hill hitters, calmly rode blind through the veil of dust on sectors 4 and 3. A brief coming together between Van Vleuten and Amir Lusik as their bikes entangled on a left-hand turn was quickly resolved, with both riders being back in the peloton by the end of Sector 3. It was beginning to look like the expected mayhem was, perhaps, all hype. Then the peloton hit Sector 2 and the proverbial hit the fan. Puncture, Utrup Ludwig. Puncture, Garcia. Bike change, Garcia. Reuser and Van Dijk driving the head of the race and splitting the group. Puncture, Nivea Doma. And a very near miss as she avoided smashing into the back of the neutral car by just millimetres. 29 kilometres to go and normality resumed as all the favourites regrouped. But with barely a moment to catch a breath, Misha Bredewald of Park Hotel Valkenburg kicked off the attacks. 6 kilometres of cat and mouse ensued before Marlon Reuser of SD Works launched her killer blow, immediately getting the gap, and with three teammates behind, in the blink of an eye, the European time trial champion was up the road and out of sight. One sector left to fight. Puncture, Garcia, again! She dropped to the back of the group and her teammate Magnaldi stopped on the other side of the road. Magnaldi passing Garcia, her much smaller bike, across the middle of the gravel road, and bam! Alex Manley, coming from behind, crashed straight into the bike, which was about to change hands. Ahead, the mayhem raged. Puncture, Van Vleuten, bike from Norsgaard. Puncture, Longo Borghini, bike from world champion Elisa Balsamo. Puncture, white jersey of Yuli de Wilder. 3 kilometres later, Longo Borghini and Van Vleuten were back in the bunch. Garcia were just behind, hoping to put her tumultuous day behind her. A couple of sticky bottles from the team car and she'd be safe again. When smash! The back wheel of her bike clipped the front of the team car and she slammed straight to the ground. Reuser, meanwhile, had profited from the turmoil behind, and no threat to either GC or yellow had opened up a fair gap, with Amir Lusik and Avita Muzic hanging in the gap behind. An absolute flyer saw Veronica Ewers of EF Tibco SVB eject herself from the pack and up to the chasers in an effort to compensate for the time lost on stage 3. But the vice world time trial champion Reuser was untouchable and stormed to the line with time to spare to savour the moment. Avita Muzic took second place from the trio behind, with Amir Lusik rounding out the podium for Canyon SRAM. Voss won the bunch sprint behind, taking fifth place ahead of Lotte Kopecky and increasing her lead in the green jersey competition whilst also retaining yellow. Femke Heritzer kept the polka dot jersey. Julie de Wilder just managed to cling on to the white jersey, whilst SD Works jumped ahead in the team classification. Mavi Garcia was the biggest loser of the day, losing both skin and 1 minute 31 seconds to her GC rivals and dropping out of the top 10 after a day she will be hoping to forget.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Tour de France Femmes, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Thank you very much to Super Sapiens, title sponsors of the Cycling Podcast. Now, we've heard during all of our Tour de France coverage some clips from their own podcast, the Super Sapiens podcast, which is hosted by Zylon van Eyck and Dr. David Lippmann. And we have another clip for you today. And this time it's from Rachel Nayland, who is here racing for Cofidis at the Tour de France Femmes and actually finished in the top group today. So an amazing performance from her. Let's hear what she had to say on their podcast.
My ex-boyfriend, I was dating a rower. He said to me, look, you know, if you're disillusioned with your athletics and if you really want to be a world-class athlete, why don't you consider an endurance sport? Why don't you consider jumping in a boat? So I learned to row, and that was a real fundamental, like real pivotal part of my story, because with the rowing, of course, comes cross-training and comes cycling and comes running, and I just took to the endurance training like, you know, like a duck in water. And that's the moment where I realized, look, yeah, I'm an endurance athlete.
Find out more about Super Sapien's system of continuous glucose monitoring, which can help tailor your fueling and training for success. Go to supersapiens.com.
Now, we don't normally think about Marlon Reuser, the winner of Stage 4, as someone who wins an awful lot. Well, if she does, she wins time trials, not necessarily road races. But, you know, Lizzie, you know her very well. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what she's like as a person.
Well, I mean, as you heard in the winner's interview, Marlon's a great character. She's a great person to have on the team. She's so funny. She always lightens the mood. And most importantly for somebody in the team, well, actually, I would say most importantly is having somebody who's a good character. But of secondary importance, she is an absolute workhorse. And although she doesn't win, she is so instrumental in SD Works victories. And if she were on a different team, you know, she would probably win a lot more because she would be the breakaway rider that would, you know, nobody would be able to touch. But because she's in this team of SD Works where there are so many strong riders, they will have numbers and she will, you know, try and bring back that solo break or whatever it is. And she will be one of those pawns that they use to play in the final of the race.
So is that, do you think that's kind of what they were playing at, or do you think that SD Works were telling Marlon Reuser to go for it today?
Oh no, I think they were definitely telling her to go for it. They had a clear numerical advantage, and people behind who weren't, you know, their main priority wasn't the stage win today. Voss's priority was keeping the yellow. Everybody else's was just keeping their powder dry for what's coming on stage 7 and 8. And they had a bunch of riders there. They actually, I think I said in the tale of the attack that they had 4 riders. They actually had 5 riders, you know, later in the stage there. So Marlon off the front and then 4 defending behind. So no other team had even nearly that number of riders there. So it was the clear strategy in order to try and win the race, because, you know, the chance of winning when you're solo is obviously a lot higher than the chance of if you're coming from a bunch, especially if that bunch contains Marianne Voss.
Yeah, that's true. And it was a very different press conference today, wasn't it, Rook? Compared to Cecily Utrecht Ludwig's yesterday.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yesterday we got a very animated, very emotional interviewee, and today we got someone quite on the opposite. Very level-headed. Very. You know, she said that this win isn't life-changing by any means. She says she's the same before as she was the same after. So it was kind of refreshing, though, to have someone who can be so humble and just say it as it is.
You know, actually, going off that, I have a lovely little anecdote about Marlon Reuser. There was a little bit of prize money that came in from the defunct Big Le Katusha, then the Keep Paul Carr team. And I think it came in whilst I was suffering from a concussion, and it took me a while to get round to organising paying it back to the riders, and when I did, it was a relatively small amount, but still, you know, 100 and something euros, and Marlon said, I don't need this money, you take it. And I said, well, I don't need this money, so we decided that we would give it to charity. But that's exactly the kind of rider exactly the kind of person that Marlon Reuser is. She is very kind, very caring, not at all selfish, and just generally a very good egg.
I love how we're doing all this fighting for equal prize money. Then we hear all the riders are going to be like, oh, I don't need that. Give it away. I don't need it. That's amazing. But, well, let's hear from Marlon Reuser herself. We heard her right at the top of the podcast, but it would be great to hear a little bit more from her. So this is a little voice memo that she sent to you, Lizzie, isn't it, after she won today.
So hi, everybody. Hi, Lizzie. I'm super happy for sure that it went that way, that I could win that stage, or we as a team SD Works, because I think in the end this was for sure a team effort, because we really said we want to make this race hard. We want to take the lead. So to enter these sections with the gravel and the climbs before, we really said we go full gas from the front to reduce the bunch, and then from this situation of that reduced bunch with 5 riders of Team SD Works, it was clear that we have to attack and try, and everybody tried, not our GC riders that were also there, which was very good, but the 3 of us, Chantal, Lotte and me, and that my attack went clear is also a bit of luck, and I'm very, very grateful I had this luck today. And yeah, I took then my chance and brought it to the finish line, and now I won this stage. so funny. I love it. But life goes on. Bye bye.
Now, what is significant also is that it was SD Works' first win of the Tour de France Femmes. And I mean, most people are expecting plenty of success to come their way as we approach the high mountains later on. But they also had something that we didn't really mention yesterday was the third place for Ashley Moorman, who is, she's one of those riders who she's always knocking on the door of victory, but she's never quite quite getting one, is she, Rook?
Absolutely. You know, always a bridesmaid.
Yeah, it could be seen that way.
But she's also, you know, she's
her and Emma Norsgaard, actually.
Yeah.
At the same wedding.
Whose wedding?
I don't know whose wedding they are. Maybe Anna van der Breggen?
Oh. I don't know that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. This metaphor has got too out of hand.
It got way too literal. It was supposed to be a metaphor. no, but she, I mean, she's also a great teammate, you know, whenever the hills go up, you know that you have, at the very least, you have one teammate with you. And I think, yeah, it's great to see her on the podium. I'd love to see her on the top step before she retires, which is coming up very, very soon. But yeah, I think it was great to see her back there on the podium.
Well, we say very soon, but we do, I think Lizzie, you mentioned to me earlier that you'd seen that Ashley Moorman was, but, you know, couldn't find anything to back it up.
It is just rumour at this stage, and so I don't want to announce it on the podcast, but it seems like Ashley may go on to race for another year, saying, well, with these legs, it would be a shame not to use them. But one thing I noticed yesterday that was really nice to see was we heard the new feature that ASO were trialling, you know, showing the race radio on the live TV feed. And we heard the director, Danny Stam, say, do not ride Ashley, we can go for Demi with this victory. But then in the last few kilometres after that bonus climb, we saw Demi riding at the front, and they'd clearly switched tactics and were going to ride for Ash. And that's really great, actually, because so often Demi gets the opportunity and not Ashley, and Ashley is in such fine form. It looks like she's in the form of her life at the moment. And I just think it's great for her to get that opportunity, and she delivered with a podium, and we'll see in the mountains if she can go two better, because she looks great. She's climbing great, her accelerations are really sharp, and I think that she is just so highly motivated for this. She works with Zwift privately as well, and so, you know, getting a result at the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift would be really huge for her.
Yeah, I would say, like,
well,
yesterday,
huge for anyone.
You and I were standing together watching the finish, and I think I may have said it out loud, but I was like, wow, she looks fresh.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, wow, everyone else looks really rather pained, and she's just like spinning uphill. She definitely looked in her element, yeah.
That would be a great double bluff by SD Works as well, wouldn't it? If it, you know, everyone's looking at Demi Vollering, you know, and Demi Vollering's been hiding away and been training especially for this. You know, if they then pulled it out that it was Ashley that they'd been working for, that would be, yeah, it'd be very clever. But I mean,
it would be great, wouldn't it?
They have those champions that they can play with, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting because so many of the top riders did go to the Giro to prepare for this race, but notably neither Demi Vollering or Ashley Moorman-Passio did. And Ashley actually talked a little bit about her preparation and said that she was doing things differently. She loved the Giro, but she wasn't there this year. She was using the women's tour and then her own specific preparation to do exactly what she knew she needed to do to be in the best shape for the tour. So she's had this in her mind for a really long time. And apart from, you know, a crash at the Vuelta Burgos, which unfortunately took her out of contention there on the first stage, which was a shame because she'd been absolutely flying in the races prior to that. She's had a relatively uninterrupted run-in. So, you know, that cannot be, you know, that cannot be underestimated, the value of actually being able to carry out your own preparation and execute it the way you want to.
Demi told me the exact same thing. The reason she skipped the Giro was that she didn't want any grey days, as she put it, like days where you're not in control of your training. There's many times in the Giro where you go under what you're capable of and where you go over than you would like to go. And I think being at home allows you to do exactly the kind of block training that you need. And they both did that. So, you know, is this what it takes to beat Annemiek? Maybe.
It might be, mightn't it? Well, let's hear from Ashley Moorman-Passio herself. I caught up with her at the end of stage four. Well, Ash, first of all, congratulations on your third place yesterday and another win for the team today.
Yeah, stage two didn't go exactly as we would have liked. We got caught up a bit with the crash. So, yeah, the past 2 days have definitely made up for it. the spirit in the team is high. You know, we came back from that disappointment pretty well, and even with Demi crashing yesterday, you know, we've shown we're a strong team. And Marlon was incredibly strong today. She was really making the pace on all of the gravel sections, so she got the free license to go for it, and yeah, we're really happy for her.
And we know that you and Demi are incredibly strong in the high mountains. What's the tactic up until you reach those stages?
Well, yeah, it's just about staying attentive, making sure we don't lose any time. You know, obviously already we had a setback in stage two, so tomorrow's going to be an important stage. It's not a lot of climbing, but it's a long stage, and we've seen in France that the wind is always a factor. So, yeah, tomorrow it's just about kind of conserving as much as we can, but staying attentive and making sure we're there. And then, yeah, the mountains are calling. They're not far away, so it's about conserving as much as we can until Saturday and Sunday.
And how important is a confidence boost like this, a morale boost with the week ahead?
That was so good.
Yeah, of course, it definitely helps to... you know, to feel strong. And yeah, yesterday was definitely a big confidence boost for me. Even today, you know, I felt really strong in the gravel sections. I was always up front. I was really happy to make it through smooth because there were some punctures and it was pretty crazy at points. But yeah, happy to get through safe and sound and looking forward to the next stages.
Well, I've just got to the first gravel section that the riders will be tackling today. It's 2.3 kilometers long. Looking at it, the gravel is very loose, and at the edges, you know, there's no defined edge to these roads. The gravel just goes all the way off, so you have to pick the right part of the road to be. If you've had a recon, then that's definitely going to be an advantage. Right now it seems very quiet. We've got lots of the soigneurs, obviously a lot of the volunteers for the teams with extra wheels. All the wheels are lined up in the long grass at the side of the road. Pretty quiet right now, apart from the odd passing vehicle kicking up a lot of dust because the road is very, very dry. You can hear the crickets, the race radio going, maybe some of the people watching a TV broadcast as they're waiting for the riders to come through. But yeah, that's not what it's going to be like when the riders come through. It's going to be chaos, I should imagine. Right just after the end of this first gravel section, there is a really hairy descent. It's pretty steep, it's pretty winding, it's reasonably narrow. So if you can make the difference there, then you know you're going to want to have to be in your own space in order to tackle that descent well. So now we're just waiting for the riders. They're not too far away, and see what the damage is done on this first gravel section. Now, Beth, we're just waiting for the riders to come through on this first gravel section. Tell us, what is involved for a team on a day like today?
It's like a mini Strada Bianca or a mini Roubaix, really, because with the four gravel sectors, you need to be prepared. There's a change in equipment in terms of change of tyres, change of wheels to where we have been using, different pressure, and then obviously a lot more resources on as many gravel sectors, as many parts of each gravel sector as you can to make sure that if something does happen and there's a puncture or whatever, that there's someone nearby, because we expect that as each sector goes on one by one, that the gaps will be bigger and therefore the race car probably is going to be even further behind. So the chance that you can lose some time just from being unlucky is pretty high, I would say.
Now, you're the co-owner of the team, so you wouldn't normally be standing with wheels at the side of the road. How many more staff have you had to put on and pull on to be on the roads today?
Yeah, we have a lot. I mean, in general, for the whole tour, we have a lot because we expected that it was going to be busy, and the more people around, you know, doing sort of individual jobs to then try to put everything together has made it easier. And so far, we've been going well. But yeah, we have people on every sector. We also have some support from Canyon and SRAM extra. So then that also means on some sectors we have two people. So we feel really confident that if something happens, we're trying our best to try to resurrect the situation.
And how do you feel today? Is it a day where time can be gained, or, you know, the race can be won, or is it just about avoiding the race being lost here?
Yeah, I think number one, if you're going for GC, if you have GC ambitions, for sure today's about just not losing time. That would be number one. I don't think the gaps will only be really big if there's been crashes or punctures from the GC contenders, and not because of form, because even though the gravel sectors are difficult and there's small climbs before them, it's not enough that it's going to be, you know, major gaps between each rider when they get to the finish line. But today, for sure, for GC, he's trying to conserve as much as possible and trying not to lose time, really. I think if you come out even, then it's probably going to be a good day for those people who really want to win yellow.
Well, let's hope that the team don't need you today and don't need your wheels. Thanks very much, Beth.
No problem.
Now I'm back and the race is just about to come through. Breakaway still away, but what was a trio is now just two riders. They've just gone through. You can see the helicopter looming low on the horizon. It's quite an incredible sight, really. Now I can just see the first group on the horizon. They're taking a big long swoop towards me. Be really interesting to see who's still up there now. Not as much dust as I thought was going to be kicked up. There's the third rider of the Demay, Valerie Demay, going through. The third rider that was in that breakaway just gone past me, but she's not got much distance now on the rest of the pack. Let's see who we've got here coming through. Movistar, Lenny Sierra right at the front. Team Bike Exchange there. You see the yellow jersey of Mariana Vos is there. And now we've got all the smaller groups already, just on this first sector already broken into little groups. I mean, there are riders here. They are just absolutely desperate to get back in there before we reach the next gravel section. The next gravel section comes so quickly after. Now we've got riders coming through now amongst the vehicle convoy. It's really hard for them here. There's hardly any space. They're being pushed, obviously, onto the right, onto the edge, where it's the roughest that it can be. There's bidons flying. Just seeing here Charlotte Cool of Team DSM. She seems to have stopped at the side of the road right at the end of this gravel section. She's obviously a very talented sprinter, an important part of Lorena Wiebes' sprint team. And the broom wagon, the Voiture Balai, is right behind her. The race isn't as broken up as I thought it was, as much as I thought it was going to be. She seems to be carrying on now, just with the broom wagon right behind her. Time for us to jump in the convoy and get our way to the finish. And find out what happens there. Well, you heard there my adventures on the gravel a little bit earlier. I just went to the first gravel section. And a lot has been made of this stage, hasn't it, Rook? Because a lot of people were looking at this four gravel sections, plenty of climbs in between, as being a really momentous day. What did you make of it in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I know the Queen stage is usually reserved for a very tough mountain stage, but in terms of the most anticipated stage, I'd say this was it. It factored all the not just the gravel, but even without the gravel, I think it would have been a very tough stage. It was punchy, it was hilly, and then the descents and even the flat riding was rather technical. The tarmac wasn't smooth at all, ever, and I think that would have taken the sting out of anyone's legs, and then add in the carnage of a gravel. It was a tough stage, for sure. And I think it's one that a lot of people go back and watch again, especially now that we know how things actually didn't shake out in the front. So what is it that they did that allowed them to stay pretty well in contention for the next few stages?
Yeah, it was funny because if you look at the GC, it was kind of all square. I mean, there was the only big loser was Mavi Garcia. But I mean, personally, I was surprised to see it, the whole group of GC contenders all coming across together, pretty much, Lizzie.
Yeah, I agree. I thought there would be a bit more kind of attacking and counter-attacking, but I think it was just that there was so much carnage on that. Well, final two sectors, but particularly the final sector. You know, you've got Longo Borghini, Annemiek van Vleuten, Nivea Dehme, you know, all three of those losing a wheel and having to have bike changes or wheel changes, plus SD Works had somebody ahead. So, well, could have SD Works then gone, well, actually, we don't care about the stage, we're going to prioritise our GC ambitions and we're going to ride and try and distance those people? Well, it probably would have been sensible for the overall GC, But how much would they have gained, and was it really worth it? You don't really know. I just think that it was more that everybody was so nervous about this stage, and you said yesterday, Brooke, that Annemiek actually said that she didn't mind the stage, but then she contradicted herself at the end of this stage, and an interview that her team put out, she said that she didn't think this stage had a place, and that it was too risky, and if the organisation put this on as a one-day race, she'll be the first person to go and be there. But she thought that the risk was too high for a stage, for a grand tour like this. But you know, we've seen cobble stages in the Tour de France, and of course we saw, sorry, the Tour de France Homme, and of course we saw Roglic losing out there, we saw Ben O'Connor losing out there. So I don't know, what do you think, Rose?
I think I'm all for a gravel stage myself. I just think that if you're going to be the best rider, because you know, when you win a stage race, you're saying that you're the best rider at, you look after yourself on the flats, you're good in the mountains, you're good on the punchy hills, you can do a summit finish. I feel like being able to handle a different terrain, whether that be cobbles or gravel, to me that's just part of cycling.
But do you think the factor of luck is too big of a factor in order to shape the GC?
No, well, I just think all of cycling is luck. Personally, I mean, it's a sport where it's not track cycling, it's road cycling. So you are having to contend with the weather. You know, so would we say like, OK, all time trials have to be done indoors because it's not fair that some people have to ride in the rain and some people don't. Some people have a slippery road to do a time trial on and some people don't. For me, that, you know, it's part of it, the luck of it. And, you know, there is obviously that technical element. And we do know that there are riders who refuse to ride on certain bikes by certain manufacturers, say, and, you know, will do paint jobs on their bike so that you don't know that they're riding an unsponsored bike and things like that. So there is a technical element in it that, you know, if you've got the staff in the right position to give you a quick change around. If you've got a strong enough team, that means that you have more of your teammates right at the finish to swap bikes with you in that event.
And we saw that with the strongest teams today. You know, it was only the strongest teams that had their teammates there in order to be able to change. But I guess my point with this particular stage is it's not just gravel. From what we could see, it's not just any old gravel. It was really pretty rough. You know, sectors 4 and 3 were okay, but then when you got into sectors 2 and sectors 1, it was pretty gnarly. And as soon as we saw, you know, that was only what we saw happening at the front of the bunch. We didn't see what was happening behind. But I think you spoke to Iris Schlappendahl, didn't you, Rose, who was on the motorbike with our colleagues at Eurosport?
So I caught up with Iris because I was watching the GCN Eurosport coverage. I can see that she was on the motorbike and was saying that she didn't think that it's part of a stage race and you shouldn't have a stage that was as gnarly as that. So let's hear what Iris had to say. Well, Iris, anyone who's watching Eurosport or GCN would have seen you on the back of a motorbike today, and you were saying when you were out there it would look like carnage on the roads, and you were questioning whether that kind of stage should be in a stage race.
Yeah, and I'm still questioning that, actually. I thought, I mean, I didn't race, and we didn't see too many people like crashing out of the GC, but for example, Garcia did. I think it was a little bit too much gravel. Like, yeah, it was not even gravel, actually. It was just stones, and I think it just becomes such a lottery then with the positions of the team cars in the caravan and how many resources you have as a team to have people on the side of the road and on which points. And yeah, I mean, it's for sure it you know, it's really attractive racing and it's exciting and everything, but yeah, from I don't know, from a rider's point of perspective or ex-rider, I think it's a little bit on the limit of what's what should be in a stage race. Eh? In a one-day race, it's different, but a stage race like this, yeah.
And but is not all cycling kind of a lottery every day anyway?
Yeah, it is a lottery, but I think this is quite a risky lottery. I mean, you always need to have luck, for example, to win. But I would at least hope that Tour de France fam, especially the first one, would be
is going to be won by the very best rider. And today it was a bit like, yeah, well, what if this very best rider, for example, is taken out or crashes out or the team car is not there? And yeah, I mean, I think at least they didn't race that hard in between the sectors, so a lot of riders could come back all the time. But yeah, I saw some pretty nasty things there out there, and I saw also very stressed DSs riding their cars and trying to get back to the front.
Would you say, I mean, is it the same case for the men's Tour de France as well? Or do you think because women's teams are less well-resourced, there's kind of a bigger gap between the top and the bottom that comes to play?
Yeah, of course we had a discussion. There has been a similar discussion with the Roubaix stage at the Tour de France. But that is definitely a good point that I also think about it. You know, a lot of teams don't have, they're not all equal in resources. And I think maybe the luck of the smaller French teams here is that they have a lot of family and friends around. But I did see a lot of family and friends along the course with, you know, extra equipment, wheels, etc. So that's then apparently where you're depending on.
Were you enjoying being on the motorbike? It actually looked worse being on the motorbike than being on a bike.
Well, maybe I am also, this is my thinking, because it was actually super scary on the motorbike. And that was probably also because I was in the caravan all the time. And, you know, the team cars were passing and I saw some near crashes between cars and motorbikes in front of me. And especially the descents were actually pretty tricky as well, especially after the last gravel section where I was really squeezing my butt to, you know, keeping my fingers crossed if everything was going to be all right. Like, I have a really amazing driver, but it's I just said it before, it Roubaix felt like a walk in the park on the back of the motorbike compared to today, really.
Oh. Well, the butt squeezing worked, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm still here and I'm still looking forward to the rest of the week, so happy to be here.
Well, that was Iris Slappendale, and I was kind of surprised because, you know, Iris is a proper hard nut, former pro racer, that I would think that she would kind of love that kind of challenge of doing a gravel race. Was that kind of surprising for you too, Ro?
It was surprising that she was, but I think the peloton has been split on this since it was announced, and Annemiek especially has been very vocal about luck not having to play a factor in GC racing. And I understand that it must be a very stressful day for them out there when every second counts. But personally, I'm a big fan of having a shake-up stage like this. I think most stage races depend on the mountains and only good climbers end up winning. And I, for one, would love to see a non-climber win a tour for once. But Marianne actually made a really good point. She said that if you have a bad day out there, you're not going to be a fan of this stage. But if you're having a good ride out there, you're not going to think it's all so bad.
Well, you know, not to question what Marianne Vos, the great Marianne Vos, has to say, but let's hear from Alex Manley, because she was actually someone who did have a bad day. When I was on the first gravel sector, she was right hanging off right the back, and then she had a mechanical, and then she was coming back, and she got taken out by Mavi Garcia, who was, we'll come to, was also having a terrible day. But let's hear what Alex Manley of Team Bike Exchange had to say.
She didn't look, and I was coming with speed, and I probably said too many words, but I was a bit caught up in the heat at the moment, and I was just coming good, and I was going to get back on, so I was just a bit disappointed, it's all good, it's just bike racing at the end of the day. I really liked the stage, it was hard and tough, and I wasn't having the best day in the middle there, but I was coming good again, so I still really enjoyed it. I think it split up the race, it was a lot was going on, so I still think it was good.
That was Alex Manley of Team Bike Exchange, who still, despite having a bad day, still, you know, was very happy with having the stage, having the gravel in it. But I did say we were going to talk about Mavi Garcia, because when you look at the GC, the only big mover was Mavi Garcia, and she was a big loser today, wasn't she, Lizzie?
Well, she had a terrible day today. I mean, we all saw what happened on the coverage. She had puncture, bike change, and then crash where she got hit by her team car. Now, I don't actually think that was necessarily the fault of the team car. If you watch it closely, it wasn't actually on her. The camera wasn't on her when it happened, but it replayed it. And she'd just taken a sticky bottle. She was just coming back to a group that was just behind the front bunch. She'd just taken a second sticky bottle, and the car hadn't had time to move backwards yet. And she came to the right and then clipped the front of the car's bonnet and on her back wheel. And then she just went smashing to the ground. And it looks like, you know, thankfully she was up and on her bike pretty much straight away. But it looks like she's got some quite bad abrasions on her shoulder. And she hit the deck so hard, not at a high speed, which are often the worst crashes. So only losing 1 minute 31 on her rival today actually isn't that bad considering the circumstances, but it will remain to be seen over the next couple of days how those injuries affect her.
Well, let's hear from Mavi Garcia's teammate Erica Magnaldi, who you said, Lizzie, was... I mean, Erica Magnaldi is tiny, and so the fact that Mavi Garcia did a bike, had to swap bikes with her, is quite incredible. Let's hear from Erica about the day for the UAE team.
It was really a tough day, and moreover, we had super bad luck. We were doing really good, like me and Mavi and Maike were always in the front group, but she had to change bike three times. First Maike gave her, then I gave mine in the last sector, and then of course for me was over. I couldn't come back, but I hope she could manage to come closer to the first group again and to limit the gap. But yeah, in these kind of stages of unluckily, you need not only to be strong, not only to have your best skills. We were doing all good, but you also need a lot of luck, and we didn't have.
Did you take any confidence from the fact that there were, you know, three of the team up there in the front group on a very difficult stage?
Yeah, it was. I think we were racing super good, and we can be aware that we have a good level, and we were fighting hard to be there, and we were there. So it was not easy already to be at that point in the race and in this first group. This is something we can be happy about, and also that we finished the stage safely. So these are two good things, and two things that make us look forward for the next stages, and especially for the last two stages that will be more suitable for me and Mavi.
Yeah, and talk to me about Mavi as a rider, what her strengths are.
She's a super kind leader. I really like her. We create a good relationship. We trust each other, and we are working well together. She is someone who never gives up, so I'm sure that she will not do it. The tour is still long, we are just halfway through it, and lots of things can still happen. She's super improved this year in racing in the front of the group, and she showed already in Giro she has a super strong climbing legs to follow the best one in the climbs, so hopefully she will do like this in the last two stages.
And what was your feeling this morning before the gravel stage? Were you looking forward to it as a team?
Well, of course, you always look at it with a bit of scare, a little bit of fear. I know I'm good in driving my bike on gravel. I did already four times Strade, and till now it was always okay. I never crashed, and I feel confident on it, but of course you are not alone, and lots of things can happen, and especially you can have puncture and mechanical. It's super easy, and this, if it's a one day race, you just start and you know this can happen. You have to have luck. If it's a stage race and you are going for a GC, this made everybody a bit nervous, because you know something can happen that you can't control, and this is exactly what happened.
Science in Sport is supporting the Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Tour de France FAM. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to our sponsors, Science in Sport. Now, if you're looking for sports nutrition, whether that be for hydration, for energy, for recovery, maybe it's vitamins and supplements that you're after, then head to scienceinsport.com, and don't forget, you can enjoy 25% off of their products if you use the code SISCP25.
Hi Rose, here we are for a little bit of French flavor on stage 4 of Le Tour Femme. And for me, probably the most exciting stage in Tour Femme, because of all the gravel sectors on the route today. And also exciting because we're on roads rarely actually ridden by by the man. I mean, I've been doing the tourist guide for the Tour de France for ASO for many years, and I didn't have lots of archives on the villages and towns we'll be going through, simply because, yeah, the Tour Femme is visiting different terrain, and it'll be interesting on a cycling point of view, but also from a touristy point of view. We start from Troyes today, and unfortunately for Lionel, the local specialty in Troyes is andouillette. I remember a few years back, it was in 2017, we had a stage finish in Troyes with a bunch sprint victory by Marcel Kittel, and the same night we all decided to hit town and go to a restaurant, and of course I ordered andouillette. Well, the least I can say, Simon Gill, the cycling podcast photographer, was there and attempted andouillette, but Lionel was not convinced at all. It's andouillette is made with porks, insides, guts, and either you like it or you don't. I mean, it's make or break. I love it, and obviously it's not the case of Lionel and many others. I mean, Simon that night tried to bury the andouillette under the salad, but anyways, andouillette is really the dish if you're in Troyes. So on our way to the Bar-sur-Aube, which is going to be the finish town of the this stage, probably the place to stop, if you're a tourist and you're looking for a little bit of history, is the village of Essois. That's at kilometer 86, because in the village cemetery lie the painter Pierre-Auguste Renoir. Renoir is one of the most famous, painters of the 19th century in France, and is buried in the village cemetery with his wife Aline Charigot and their sons Jean Renoir, who was a famous film director. He directed La Grande Illusion. Masterpieces of French cinema in the 1930s, and also his Jean Renoir's brother was an actor called Pierre Renoir, and all the family were artists, and all the Renoir family are buried in the small cemetery of Issois. So if you want to pay a homage to great painting and great cinema, that small village on the route of the stage is a must see. And Bar-sur-Aube, the Finnish town of today's stage, was called Segesera in Roman times. It was famous for its medieval fairs, and it's the French capital of hemp. It's actually quite a bustling cycling city, because towards the end of July, after this Tour Femme is finished, it's renowned for the cycling nights. There's a kind of criterium going around town, where everybody can be involved there. So really a tradition of cycling in Bar-sur-Aube. It actually hosted a stage of the Tour de l'Avenir in last August. As I said before, the Tour de l'Avenir last year was kind of a prototype for the parcours of this Tour de France Femme. That's it for today, Rose. Talk to you tomorrow.
Well, thank you again to Francois Thomazeau for enlightening us into this lovely area that we've been in today. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from Francois for the rest of the week. But I'll tell you who caught my eye at the finish line today, and that was Veronica Ewers. And she'll be familiar to podcast listeners because I spoke to her at the Women's Tour last year when she was briefly in the time trial hot seat. And she was the rider who said, oh yeah, this is like the third ever time trial that I've ever done.
Second.
And
she was seventh on the stage, yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. She'd come over from playing soccer, but Rook, you've been working on a story quite recently with Veronica. Tell us what you know about her.
Yeah, well, she is from a very small town in Idaho that I happen to have gone to school in. It's Moscow, Idaho, not Moscow, Rushko.
Yeah, what? There's a Moscow in Idaho.
Moscow, Idaho, yep.
Wow.
And until very recently, her Wikipedia page actually said she was from Moscow, Russia, until a friend of hers corrected it. So
she's lucky that she hasn't been sanctioned. Very lucky. But yeah, an incredible performance for Veronica. I mean, you know her well, Lizzie. She's your teammate, in fact. But I mean, her star is rising at an incredible rate,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
She's got such a huge talent.
No, exactly. I mean, she was my real dark horse, and I guess still is for the GC. But she had a rough time yesterday. She was involved in those crashes just leading into the Côte de Mutiny yesterday. And even though she wasn't in a crash, she smashed up her bike, broke her shifter. She actually took teammate Letizia Borghese's bike and ended up losing a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, I think. But yeah, I sent her a message last night and I said, Cecilia Utrup-Ludwig lost 2 minutes on stage two and she won today. So hopefully that gave her a bit of motivation. But I mean, she absolutely flew out of the pack when she attacked today to try and get across to the chasers, which she did just with lightning speed. And, you know, I would say, I would go as far to say is she's one of the top five maybe steep climbers in the world. I think she just doesn't know her limits yet. She's taking time like anybody to adjust to riding in the bunch, to knowing how to save energy, just knowing how to be a GC rider. And although, you know, she might come away and say, well, you know, clearly I'm not a top five, you know, climber because I didn't get top five on the stage. And I'd be like, well, yeah, but look how much more energy you use, Veronica. So she got her first pro win at Elsie Jacobs, and then she went on to win again in Spain in May. So she's had a phenomenal first full season in Europe, because, you know, she came over last year. I think Paris-Roubaix was her first race in Europe, which was absolutely bonkers. And then she went on to place so well at the women's tour. So she is one to watch. And I think that the big GC, I shouldn't really be saying this, really, should I? She's my teammate. But the big GC riders need to watch out for her, because they will all be looking at each other. And especially now that she's lost a bit of time, if they let her go, she can be really, really dangerous. And I really hope she is, because she is my teammate and she's my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's definitely a rider I've been excited about watching. I had her picked as my dark horse as well. She, in 2018, showed up at her first group ride in nothing but tennis shoes and leggings. You know, wow. No clipless pedals, no lycra, just showed up for a group ride.
No, nothing.
And then here she is today at the Tour de France.
It's incredible. I mean, it's an incredible ride. I'm really excited, because I feel like I catch up with her every race. And I'm like, oh, look how amazingly you're doing. You must be surprising yourself. She's like, yes, I'm so surprised. And then I see you a few months later. You must be really surprised. I am really surprised.
I think that was great, wasn't it? To see that enthusiasm for somebody, you know, people are so often criticised for coming fourth, or if you don't win, it seemed to be a disappointment. And it was so beautiful to see her after the finish, just absolutely elated with that fourth place. And she was driving that group to the line in order to gain more time on the GC. So she wasn't kind of contesting a podium spot. But it was... You know, we'll hear from Veronica in a moment, and it was her first, you know, top four, top five in the world tour, and that is a really significant moment and a big step forward for her.
How much did you enjoy it out there? Or is enjoy the right word?
Yeah, you know, I had a friend before this race say, like, go out there and have fun, and I'm like, you know, it's fun, but I'm scared shitless, like, 85% of the time, because I'm still, like, trying to navigate the peloton still. But once it was a smaller group, I was like, okay, this is awesome. And then I honestly had a really good time in the gravel sections today. It was fun feeling like I was in control of the bike. And we rode 30-millimeter Vittoria tires today, and that was super beneficial. I definitely noticed it on the pavement being a little bit more drag, I guess, but it saved me on the gravel, clearly. There were a lot of people puncturing and crashing today, but I felt super comfortable and confident on the gravel.
I mean, how many times have you done a gravel race?
I've done one race. Ridden on gravel, this was probably my sixth or seventh time.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Are you expecting to be up the road today, then?
No, not really. I was like, okay, gotta be like toward the front at this kilometer, and like be toward the front in the first gravel section, and then see where you're at. Hope for the best. Hope I have some luck today. But yeah, solid equipment and luck were on my side today.
was part of the motivation for attacking to be in a smaller group so that you could be a little bit more comfortable?
Yeah, I think I've forgot at what K. It was the second to last longer climb on the pavement when I attacked to bridge to the FDJ. I think it was Avita and Elena with Canyon SRAM. My DS was telling me, you know, this is your chance. So I was like, okay, this is going to hurt, but it worked out in my favor. So, yeah, I mean, a top five result for the first time for myself. So pretty exciting.
Do you feel like other riders, you know you better now, a little bit more aware, you know, when you attack that it's a serious thing?
Maybe. I've had a few big names, like Ashley came up to me at the women's tour and was like, hey, Veronica, you're doing a good job. And I was like, oh my God, you know my name. Oh my God. So I still have moments where I'm like fangirling over these big hitters. So it's like, I'm almost in tears and in shock when they know my name. So it's pretty fun.
Well, that was Veronica Ewers. And I'm very excited to see how she gets on for the rest of the week. Because if anything, the terrain is only going to suit her more and more as the week goes on. Should be a little bit of a quieter stage tomorrow, Rook. Might there be a single quiet stage in this race? I don't know.
There are no easy days in the Tour.
Spoke like say. A true pro.
It's a very
next
long
we'll be
stage.
Saying it's a long way to Paris, won't we?
Absolutely. Long way away from Paris, but yeah.
Yeah. It is a long stage though, long being the keyword and everything we've said so far. It's I believe the longest in a stage race in modern history. So it's a long ways, and I think a lot of people are going to want to see if they can shake up the GC and get some time. So I think a lot of people are going to try to make a breakaway happen, whether they're succeeding or not. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Well, that's you left it on a perfect cliffhanger there, Rook. You're just doing my job for me. Thank you, ladies, for your company tonight. The champagne is dry, and now we're faced with trying to find somewhere to eat in a very small, pretty town, which is always the case in France. So, Rook, thank you very much for your company.
Thanks for having me.
And Lizzie, thank you again for calling up, and I hope you enjoyed your rosé as well.
I did very much. But actually, I just really wanted to quickly squeeze it in before we go. One rider that
squeezing
I wanted
like
to,
a squeezy bunchy. Here she comes.
Yes. And one rider that I wanted to fit in was Coralie DeMay, who was the rider in the break for such a long time. And I feel she should have been given the most attacking rider prize today, because she was out off the front for 50 kilometres and, you know, the biggest proponent of that break, attacking them, staying away. And it was given to Marlon Reuser, who, of course, took the stage win. And I'm sure Marlon won't mind me saying that I don't really feel she should have been given that prize. So, you know what? Instead of getting that prize and going on the podium, Coralie, we're just giving you a big shout on the Cycling Podcast and saying that we think it should have gone to you.
Absolutely. No, Lizzie, that is the perfect thing for you to say, because we are looking for recommendations for Pédaleurs de Charme. So if you agree with Lizzie and think that Coralie would be a great recipient of the Pédaleurs de Charme, that's a beautiful Stacey Snyder mug that we give to a rider who we think has pedalled so charmingly or done some very good sportsmanship. And we want your suggestions, so please message in and send us your suggestions. And you've been just given one on a plate there by Lizzie, so thank you for that, Lizzie.
You're welcome.
So we'll have to see who will be charmingly pedalling tomorrow, won't we? But Lizzie, thank you as always for your company too. Just going to leave everyone tonight with our next Tour de Buffalo. And this is, again, actually from the 2018 Le Course, at the time when me, Richard and Orla had first gone on our very first daily episodes at the Women's Tour, and we just had a very short break and met up again at Le Course, and as I'm sure you'll hear, Richard was thrilled to be reunited with us.
The Tour du Buffalo, remembering Richard Moore.
We have got the Tour de France going on around about us. There's a men's supporting race happening at the moment.
Yes. Yeah, there's an add-on.
Earlier this morning, we watched...
an afterthought.
We were up early for La Course.
Very early.
Which, well, finished a couple of hours ago, and we're gonna talk about that in the first part. We're going to talk about the Giro Rosa in the second part. We've got other bits and pieces as well, a bit of news as well. But this is our first, I suppose, outing together since the Women's Tour, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That
it
was
is.
Good fun. That was the an intense few together. Days.
Yeah.
It was an intense few days.
It was
well,
an intense
the three of us together.
Yeah, in a good
fun.
Way.
It was like a school trip.
I wouldn't have said intense.
I like intensity. I need.
Now he's like exactly. Look how
intense
he was internally fuming the entire
intense.
Time, and we
no,
thought
I,
we were on
I need a bit of intensity in my life. I enjoyed it.
I just need to stay a short kid.
It was good fun. This is supposed to be a good thing.
It's not though.
No, people don't say I'm breaking up with you because you're not intense enough.
Wow, Rose and Orla. Rose and Orla.
Likes to feel alive.
It's awkward to do this while we're recording, but I really.
But.
It's been great.
Well, no, hang on. We are intense. That's good. We can keep the relationship going.
Yeah.
We've established that.
Great. I like
that's
that.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's long may it continue. So we had an intense race, and I'm sure we can all agree that was a good thing.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.